Just 1 year into Donald Trump's term as president, journalist Michael Wolff told the story of a White House consumed by controversy, chaos, and rivalries in his bestseller, Fire and Fury. It was an instant sensation defining the first phase of the Trump administration. Now, in his new book, Siege, Wolff has written an equally explosive book about a presidency that is under fire from almost every side, much like the book itself. Michael Wolff is the author of Siege, Trump Under Fire, and we welcome him to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Delighted to be here.
For you as a writer putting out this volume, how is it different than when Fire and Fury came out of just the atmosphere?
Let me divide two atmospheres, the atmosphere in the White House and the atmosphere in the country. You know, I would say the first book, Fire and Fury, was really about chaos, of nobody knowing what was going on, of having to face Trump and thinking, what is this creature? And the second book is really about meltdown, I would say. It's about watching Trump losing the people around him, becoming more and more isolated, taking greater and greater risks, pushing the Trump ethos. And the Trump ethos is really about what he can get away with, and pushing that ever further. And, you know, one of the things about pushing that, if I can, you know, doing things that you think you can get away with and even getting away with them, is that eventually you're going to increase the odds that you're going to be caught.
Before we get into some of the meat and potatoes of the book, were your sources different? Was the playing field different for you in the reporting of this story versus the first book? The first book comes out,
yes.
It creates an uproar. It has to have some effect on the relationships that you had forged to get the material from the first book.
You know, I think mostly not. As a matter of fact, the reason I wrote the second book is that it turned out to be a natural segue. And remember, most of the people that I spoke to for the first book, they were in the White House then. They are now all out of the White House. Not only they are out of the White House, but the people who replaced them are out of the White House. So there's this really kind of sense of people who just can't stop talking about this crazy experience they have had working for Donald Trump. You know, I think in the end, most of these people, or a good number of these people, felt that the portrait I painted in my book Fire and Fury was an accurate one. So they kept talking, and I had not necessarily meant to write a second book, but, you know, as I say, the calls didn't stop coming, and the conversation continued, and Donald Trump continued. So here we are.
Let me ask you a question. I mean, just you could pick any story, I guess, but the latest we hear that the president has trying to fire all of his internal pollsters who may have leaked internal polling information. In reading your book, that seems to be the pattern, right, of what you were just saying of people who talk. What is it about working in that White House that is so disarming, and I think that's the proper word, that prompts people to want to share those experiences?
Well, you can remember when you work in the White House and when you bring information to the president, this president of the United States, you can only bring good news. There's no room for what would be the word? Reality, I suppose, would be the word. He needs to see things the way he wants to see them. So that creates this effect of people needing to tell someone the truth. These pollsters leak this information because they live in a bubble in this White House it's an unreal place. It's fed with unreal information. And, you know, in the end, actually, that there are people who are relatively professional that surround Donald Trump or have surrounded Donald Trump. And they, they need to tell someone what they know.
When you look at this year that you write about, of course, it is almost consumed by the Mueller report and that shadow, correct? I mean, that is the shadow that is over the president and the administration throughout this book.
Right, but let me, even there, I will say it's a shadow that in some ways may have existed more for the opposition or people opposed to Donald Trump. You know, it was bothersome to him, but, you know, he really never wavered in his belief that he would beat them, that if he called it a witch hunt enough, people would come, that would, either people would come to believe it, or it would come to undermine the investigation, or and I think this is partly what happened, he would spook the investigators enough. And he always said that he thought at best, the worst case scenario would be that it would be a draw. And basically it has been a draw.
In the people that you spoke to, and this obviously comes up throughout the investigation and throughout the Mueller investigation, as to how do you believe someone who has proven to be a liar? And I guess the same could be said for the people that you talked to in this book, who just by the nature of being in the administration have perhaps, or in most cases, an odd relationship with the truth.
Well, you know, it's a great question, and I think you have to proceed very carefully as you try to thread this needle. I mean, you begin with the fact that the president doesn't tell the truth. Actually, you can sort of, the president never tells the truth. That given the opportunity, even if it doesn't really help him not to tell the truth, he doesn't tell the truth. He just shades the reality and turns it into what he wants it to be. And that affects everyone else around him. And they tell several shades of truth. You know, many of the things that people have told me in this book, they have then turned around and publicly denied. And so I think you're working on a whole kind of a range of public conversations versus private conversations. And as a writer, my job is the way all of these things. I mean, I've known these people now, some of them for almost, I've been reporting on Trump for 3 years now. So I've known some of these people for that length of time, others for a couple of years. And you start to, as this unfolds, you can measure what they tell you. Is this someone who privately, no matter what they say publicly, is this someone privately who is telling me the truth? And I think that to a great extent, I have that sorted out.
Steve Bannon was a major figure in the first book, and you rely on him for information in the second book. I'm interested in what your relationship is with him in the sense of the information that you get and what impact he still has on the White House, even though he has long been removed.
My relationship with him is a good one. He's a good source. He has been willing to offer a perspective on Trump and the administration on a daily basis. I would say in sum, given all of the people that I've spoken to have been around Donald Trump, Bannon is among the most insightful, and he still is deeply involved, remains deeply involved with this administration. He and the president don't speak directly, but they remain deeply involved with each other. Trump is obsessed with anything that Bannon says in any venue. Bannon is uses the levers of the people around Trump to constantly move him toward the Bannon view, or sometimes what's called Trumpism, that's really Bannonism, against China, against immigration. the real hardcore positions. So they're in one of the odder political relationships of modern times. They hate each other, but they need each other. They feel trapped by each other, but they can't get away from each other. So they're caught in this bizarre dance in which, for instance, Trump is always debating whether he should reach out to Bannon, and sometimes he has, to try to bring him back into the White House. A big fear on Trump's part is that he can't win re-election without Bannon, but that it would not really be worth winning re-election if he had to depend on Bannon.
Which brings perfectly to my final question for you, which is this book, of course, having much to do with the Mueller report and what's going around, but also we assume that this year will be consumed by re-election.
I think we can fairly assume that, yes.
Yeah, and do you have any sense in the reporting of the first two books that is that going to be anything radically different than what we saw in 2016?
Yes, I mean I think one of the things about Trump, one of the things that lets him be Trump, is that it is somehow always radically different. He is somehow always does the the unexpected. You think you have certain assumptions about how he's going to behave, and he surprises you every time. I mean, the thing I wonder about this the coming election is I don't think Trump psychologically is able to lose. So the idea of him waging this campaign and then in November 2020 losing, I don't think that's sustainable for him. So what happens if the numbers are bad, and that goes to him firing the pollsters? What does he do if a year from now he is facing a potential personal apocalypse if he loses the election? I don't know the answer to that question, but I think it's one that we should keep our eye on.
The name of the new book is Siege, Trump Under Fire. It is published by Henry Holt. Michael Wolff, thank you very much for being with us. Pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Again, Michael Wolff is the author of Siege, Trump Under Fire. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.